All right, folks, you've been here for Trigger Happy Havoc, SDR2, Ultra Despair Girls, and now V3. We wanted to take a deep dive and compare those games and see what are the similarities chapter to chapter. We're finally in our V3 season, which means that we can finally share our opinions on all three games in relation to the chapters. But as a heads up, this will thus spoil
The
the entirety
entirety.
of the Danganronpa season. Exactly. So get excited. We're going to spend this episode comparing chapter one from specifically the main three games. I don't know if anyone has any additional thoughts from Ultra Despair Girls, but we'll just have to find out.
We will. And we'll be covering chapter two after the break.
Without further ado, let's get started.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Marin.
And I'm Caroline.
And we're the Ultra Milk Girls.
Welcome to the Danganronpa Podcast.
You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
Yeah!
Guys, this might be a rough recording session for me. But bear with me.
It's okay. I'm sorry your tongue hurts, dude.
I was gonna say, so do you want to share with the audience why?
It's so bad. We may choose to cut this out. I don't even know. Caroline, I'll leave it up to you when you're editing later. But just before, about 10 minutes before we started to record this episode, I was eating dinner, listeners, and I bit my tongue so hard, I bled from my tongue. And it is now 10 minutes later, and I'm no longer bleeding, but I'm in a lot of pain. And it's right on the tip of my tongue that hurts. So.
That hurts. Sorry.
Speaking is a little bit difficult right now.
Maddie is here. If she's not as vocal, she's here in spirit.
That's
and
right.
Physically also here, just not speechually here.
I'll just be the laughing track for this episode.
Good. Oh god. That was horrifying. Oh. All right. Trial one. I basically came up with like a list of like things that happen in every trial one and like and similarities between all of them. The first big one that I noted is that the first victim is always a character that you think is going to be important for the rest of the game.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really impressive that they managed to surprise us three games in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you guys know how shocked I was when Rantaro was killed. I was like so utterly shocked. But yeah, like Sayaka, you think is going to be like the love interest. Byakuya is like, you think is back as Byakuya. Yeah. And then Rantaro seems like he has something going on. And they literally it's not easy to surprise someone with the same kind of twist three times in a row, but they did it. They managed to pull it out.
And they even doubled it and gave it to the next person in V3 with us not only being surprised by Rantaro, but then being surprised by Kaede.
Yeah.
Who we thought would be important for the rest
double
of the
it and
game.
Give it to the next person.
And the other thing is like with Sayaka that's really interesting that I don't know if you guys know is in like I believe it's like the demo version of the game or like some like pre-release version of the game, the first victim was Yasuhiro. So it was to the point where they were that committed to covering up the fact that Sayaka was going to be the first victim and like that committed to like, you know, that surprise element, you know? And yeah, so that's just a kind of cool fun fact that literally the audience's least expected person died. And there's always a character like Sayaka in relation to the main character, Mikoto, in a lot of other anime and video game media. And we think she's going to be his assistant. Which, speaking of assistants, we always find out also that someone that's helping us is not who they say they are or not being honest, right? So we have like Nagito and Kaede, for Shuichi, and then Sayaka is the victim too. So
yeah, Very true. And I feel like the victims as well wanted to kill for the most part. The victims usually had some sort of plan to either kill or stop an attack. I mean, we have Sayaka who tried to kill Leon. We have in V3, obviously Kaede was trying to kill the mastermind. And then in game two, you could make an argument that Tugami was, I mean, I don't necessarily know that he was trying to kill someone, but he did take all the weapons at the very beginning of the party. And he did go under the table to investigate like the paint and whatnot. So I don't know, maybe that one lesser. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but yeah.
I feel like another common theme is that there's almost throughout all three of them, this kind of like, oops, killed the wrong person.
Right. Oopsie.
Because in game one, it was supposed to be Leon who was going to die because Sayaka was trying to kill him and Ohio the turntables. So there you go. And then in game two, Teru was aiming to kill Nagito. He didn't mean to kill Byakuya. And then in game three, Kaede was aiming for the mastermind who shouldn't know exactly who that was, but Rentaro was in fact not the mastermind. So it was like all three of them, it's like oops. Whoops.
It's true. And the motive feels a lot more personal in this case as well. I mean, I guess or I should say the as an audience, we feel bad for every person who is executed. I mean, that is true for, I think, most of these, I would say, but this case especially, like, because Leon's like the, you know, we as an audience don't know that the trial is going to happen before Leon kills. So he thinks he's getting away with it. Right. But so there is that sort of like, oh man, like, yikes. And like, you know, him being the first execution is really brutal. And automatically we're like, oh gosh. And all of the executions following that have that same sort of feeling, because like Teru's like reasoning and backstory is so sympathetic and like quite sad. Honestly, as much as I hate that little guy. and then like Kaede, we feel bad for her because like she was trying to do the right thing, you know, in her own really silly way. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually feel like none of the murderers were following the motive that was presented.
That's a good point.
I think
point.
You could definitely make that argument because Sayaka wanted to kill to get her band back, not Leon. Leon didn't kill for the motive. Teru wasn't going to get like his, he wasn't going to kill to get his memories back until the threat of someone else doing it was present. Like, I feel like he was more motivated by speed and like a reactionary kill, like kind of we talked about in game two, then or not game two, chapter two of V3, then actually following a motive. And then for Kaede, she killed to find the mastermind, not to take advantage of the first blood perk.
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, like the motive didn't really have an impact on like the reason that they, I mean, it did in a way, like where like Sayaka was affected by the motive, but like, yeah, but like the person who did the killing, that's a really good point.
Yeah. I would say out of the three of those, probably Teru's case followed the motive, the intended motive most closely.
Yeah.
I think because you're right with those other two, like with Leon, he completely was not, that was not premeditated at all. That was like, oh shit, she's trying to kill me. Well, I guess I'm going to try to kill her back. And then in game three, Kaede was completely with her own plans, you know, so.
It's true. Yeah. And the other thing that is huge here is like we also have like a building on of plot reveals, I feel. So like game one, we don't know a whole lot. Game two, sort of like the beginning information that we have is like equal to the information we have at like the end of the game. So it's almost like, okay, where could this go from here? And then in game three, we sort of have something very similar where it's like we have like a set amount of information, but then the information that we don't know is that the protagonist that we're playing with is not going to be the protagonist for the rest of the game, right? That's like the escalation of information. And then it's like, okay, where does it go from there kind of thing? It's like building one after the other in a way that I think is really, really cool.
Definitely. I'll be honest, I really only have one other thing to compare between the first three, which is there is a large theme of balls. And by that, I mean, I could phrase that in a better way.
But you're right. You're absolutely correct. I'm now realizing that.
Because game one, we have the crystal ball that is Hero's possession, but it's used to throw and, you know, start the incinerator. And then in V3, we have the shot put ball. I don't really know. Is there a one in game two? Or is that, am I maybe.
Balls of meat. Meat balls.
Meat on the balls.
Meat on the balls. Meat on the...
Also, in the first game, Leon is killed with baseballs.
That is true.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ultimate, I mean, like, baseball star. I mean,
balls are round. Teru Teru is also fairly round.
That's a good point. Can't argue with that. Oh, man. Oh, my. And the killers, yeah, all the killers killed who they didn't intend to kill, in a way. Like, Leon is more kind of, you know, but Sayaka intended to kill Leon, and, you know, that didn't work out. And then Teru Teru was trying to kill Nagito, because he was the one trying to commit murder. And then Kaede was trying to kill the mastermind, aka Moogs, yeah. Even though we do have that funky, like, thing where it's like we find out later that it's not actually Kaede,
right?
Obviously, but that's sort of a conversation True. For later. I feel it's more just like how it's unfolded to the audience.
Yeah, interesting. So Smoogie is the actual killer in V3. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break before we hop right on into chapter 2 of all of the games and talking about their similarities. But before we do, we want to let you know that if you want to make sure you're notified of our episode every week, make sure you subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. And we have a bunch of cool bonus episodes on our Patreon if you want to check us out there. The link is in the episode description. And we have a lot of cool stuff on there. Anyone a Taylor Swift fan? Because there's a Taylor Swift episode on there. And yeah, we'll be right back after the break.
Just a heads up, as we head into this second chapter discussion, that we are going to be covering some themes of depression and suicide. So if you got to turn off the episode here at this halfway point, please feel free to do so. And we'll see you next week when we dive into chapter 3.
And we're back. We're back, and it's time for chapter 2.
I feel like there's more to unpack with the chapter 2 chapters. Do you guys feel the same?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
The themes explored, because chapter 1, it's almost impossible for, like, especially with a fresh group of people, to, like, have a whole lot of themes to unpack, because we don't know the characters very well. But now we are starting to know the people very well, because we've went through one trial with them. And so, yeah, Maddie, totally true. Totally true.
I can start out by just saying each of these games for chapter 2 have a lot of rules. The rules are key in chapter 2, because game 1, we've got the bathroom rules with gender. Game 2, we've got rules about littering, rules about, you know, the outhouse, or I guess it wasn't an outhouse. What was it, like
the shower room area?
Yeah. And then game 3, we have all of the rules about the pool, nighttime rules, that sort of stuff. So yeah, game 2 in terms of the case followed a very loophole-esque murder.
True.
Yeah.
Right. It's also interesting to me that water is very present, a present motif in all of them. Because there's, you know, it happens in the locker, in game 1, it happens in the locker room of the pool. In game 2, it happens at a beach house on the ocean. And game 3, it happens across the pool. And then Ryoma goes swimming with the fishes. But yeah, so that's funny. I like that just feels like a thing. Maybe that maybe doesn't mean anything, but maybe it does. Who knows? But yeah, I the rules thing is definitely, and the loophole thing too, because what struck me as being interesting between game 2 and 3 was the fact that like things that were not supposed to be used for deduction ended up being used for deduction. Like in game 2, the body discovery announcement, the timing of when that came off, when that went off, helped to figure out how many people were present when the person was originally killed, like how many people had seen the body first. And then in game 3, there was that moment when like the Monocubs revealed that like the killer had like gone to them and asked them about like the rules and about what their plan was like, and they let that slip, and so that helped the rest of the people figure it out, which I don't know.
It's true. There's also the common theme in chapter 2 of identity reveals, and those identity reveals having a huge impact on the rest of the game. Like one of the characters or a few of the characters are quite impacted by that change of identity. So in the first game, we've got Chihiro. We find out that Chihiro is not biologically male or female. We find out that he's biologically male, which is a huge part of that plot. And then we have in the second, and we have Genocide Jack and Toko. Yeah, and that affects the game till the end. In the game 2, we have the reveal of Pekko and Fuyuhiko having a previous relationship before going into the game, and that impacts Fuyuhiko throughout the rest of the game, and that whole trial and her legacy and everything is hanging over his head the whole time. And in game 3, we have the reveal of Kurumi being a prime minister. Literally a prime minister. And good.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and Maki as well.
Yes, and Maki being an assassin revealed. Right. That is so true. Oh, yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
And there's always some unknown information to the player. There's always some guessing aspect of it, like the Mondo with the coat and the jacket color and how Kyoko tricks him into saying that, even though Byakuya knew the whole time that it was him and probably would have told the group for the sake of his own life. And then we've got that again, kind of Pekko and Fuyuhiko having this relationship and knowing that, you know, and it's impossible to solve the rest of the thing unless you kind of know that information. And then similarly with game 3, we find out there's like, what was it? There's another thing in game 3 where there's like a guessing aspect. Like it's like they don't know for sure.
It was with the Monocubs with Monosuke saying that someone had asked him for whether the one thing broke the rules or not.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And also like even Shuichi lying and saying that he heard Maki, like there's also that, I don't know, that kind of feeds into that too. Anyway,
absolutely. I would also argue for the reveals of characters that we hadn't seen before. For the most part, you could make an argument that someone else revealed that characterization. So in game 1, we have Byakuya revealing that Toko is the assassin. In game 2, I would need to double check this information, but I think Fuyuhiko was pretty imperative in the revealing of Pekko as having an assassin's capabilities. And then in game 3, I would say that Kokichi revealed that Maki was an assassin. But you could further that argument and say that those people or someone accused those people within the trial, and obviously game 2 it's accurate that Pekko did do the murder, but in game 1 and game 3 I would like to make the, you know, accusation that Byakuya outed Toto.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
And Hope's Peak Academy. But Byakuya revealed Toko as being an assassin potentially to save her. That he pointed out that that was the way that Toko killed, to then point out the differences in the case that they saw versus the case that Toko normally, or I should say Genocide Jack, normally performs as, like, the way that she kills didn't match. And same in V3, where Kaito says, like, or I'm sorry, Maki says, like, no, we should examine me, and proved that, like, she wasn't able to do right. it. Like, those people were put into the spotlight to see whether or not they could have done it.
It's true.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah. You know, one thing that I thought was interesting up to this point as well is the manner of death of each of the victims. Because in game one and two, for the first two cases, the manner of death lines up. In trial one, it's stabbing. So Sayaka was stabbed. The ultimate imposter was stabbed, you know. And then in trial two, it's blunt force trauma to the head, with Chihiro getting smacked with a dumbbell and Mahiru getting smacked with the baseball bat. And then in V3 is where it starts to deviate, with Rentaro having been killed by getting smacked over the noggin and Ryoma getting drowned, which is interesting to me that it seems like they were on, like, a parallel and then veered off the tracks a little bit. I don't know if that was intentional again, but yeah.
To your point though, Ryoma was hit in the head prior to being drowned.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rentaro was not stabbed though.
Right. That's true. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Ooh. Stabbed in the back. Ayo.
Got him.
But you know what they say? You know what Bring Me the Horizon says, Marin? True friends stab you in the front.
Are they okay? Every quote you've given me is like significantly sad.
No, they're like an emo metal band. They're not okay.
Petition to give them all one hug.
But also, I mean, like, Kaede at her execution was stabbed, and she's the real victim, right? In a way. I mean,
oh, her, true. Yeah, true. When the thorns go.
Right, smush her.
Lots of stabs. Yeah.
She probably would have been, this is so morbid, but she probably would have been dead from the noose first, though, before that happened.
It's true. Yeah. All the victims were also murdered and then moved. So, like, Chihiro was murdered, and then Byakuya found his body and moved it and staged it. And then Mahiru was hit and then dragged and positioned in that way. Mm-hmm. And then Ryoma was killed and then moved.
Ziplined across the pool.
And sorry, I think you mean rope-weighed across. So sorry, but I need you to use the correct language when referring to...
Nobody says rope-weighed.
I have never in my life heard rope-weighed. Who the hell made that choice? Anyway.
It's going to be my mission to use that in, like, a... Hey, guys, thanks for coming to listen to our episode. We'll be back.
And then at the next episode, I'm just not there.
Mm. Right. Okay. Just like,
we had to kick Maddie off.
We don't want to get into it. Everything is fine. But Maddie will not be continuing with us on the podcast.
She made one too many D's nuts jokes.
Cause of death. D's nuts.
Hey. What were the motives for all of these were also sort of surrounded by secrecy. Like, there's the, like, monopad swaparoo, and then the swaparoo. and the secrets, like the literal, like, secrets, and then the like game and how Twilight, like, Murder there's series. A test of trust with of those aspects. And I feel like this is, like, really the case that really solidifies, like, the relationships between all the people in the game as well. Like, this is the game where Kaito for and sure. Shuichi start being buddies, and we kind of start seeing Kaito like Maki a little bit, I think, or, like, have a little soft spot for her. And just relationships are more established. Everyone's roles in the game are solidified, because trial one, again, is sort of like a, like, bait and switch, you know, every time. So, yeah.
In terms of the motive, I would also like to point out that there is, like, a theme of all the characters being like, do we or do we not go with this? Because like in game one, there's a suggestion that everyone, I think it might be Taka who suggested it, that everyone just share their secrets right now, right here, right now, so there's no more motive anymore. Just everyone share them now. And people are not willing to do that. But then in game two, it's like, okay, do we go and play this Twilight Syndrome murder series or do we not? Do we ignore it or do we play it? Like, should we all play it? Should we all be on the same page or should we pretend it doesn't exist? And then game three, do we watch the videos or do we not watch the videos? Let's all agree not to watch them, but then Gokichi's going to try to force us all to watch them. And it's like, in all of those cases, people don't come to the agreement to all mutually just share the information so we're all on the same page. That never happens, right? Like, no one agrees to share their secrets. Some people are like, no, I'm going to stay away from this game. We shouldn't play it. We shouldn't play it. And then people are going and playing it in secret. Mm-hmm. And then in game three, everyone agrees to not watch the videos. And then people start watching them and sharing them in secret, blah, blah, blah. So, but what's most interesting to me out of all that is that Hajime is the only one out of the three protagonists, I would say, who like deviates and goes behind everyone's back and is like, I'm going to go play this game. Because Shuichi never looks for his motive video. He doesn't bother. And Makoto, I think, unless I'm remembering wrong, is willing to share his secret. And but Hajime is the one who's like, no, I'm actually going to go play the game, but I don't want anyone to know. And that's interesting to me.
That's a good point.
I don't know if Makoto was willing to share. I think he was, I don't know if he ever got presented with the opportunity to share. I think it was more like at the end of the case that he was like, wow, like my secret was wetting the bed. Like that was so much less than anyone else's secret. Right, but I don't know that he knew that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's true.
But the differences between Hajime and Shuichi in their very similar predicaments, very different responses, that was really interesting to me. Yeah, because Shuichi never even, like, we never even really see Shuichi struggle with the conflict of should I or should I not go seek out my own
video. He just never even...
It doesn't come up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Makoto was like, okay, I have this, I'll watch it. And in game two, Hajime was like, yeah, I'll look and see what this is, even though it probably doesn't have to do with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're so right. Yeah.
It's true. There's also always someone in the trial room who knows who did it. Like, that's a huge part of this as well. So we have Byakuya knows it's Mondo. He saw him do it. Fiihiko knows it's Pekko. He was there when she did it. And then I guess game three is the one weird one with that. But I think it, I mean, it all comes back to Manosuke for me. I think he, you know, again, like, so that, you know, that person who knows that information is sort of like the guarantee almost that that person won't get away with it.
And you could totally make the argument that in game three, Kaito knew, quote unquote, it wasn't other people. Like, the knowledge was like just the gut feeling of saying, I know it's not these ones, which left only one.
Yeah, true.
I have a comparison, which is that all of the killers killed for someone else. I think the weakest argument that with that would be Mondo, just because I would defend that as Mondo was killing for his brother to protect that secret of someone else, or I don't know. That one's a little bit weaker, but Pekko killed for Fuyuhiko, even though he didn't ask for it, and Kurumi killed for everyone, even though... they did ask for it. I don't know. Something interesting.
True. And also the victims have sort of this unresolved trauma too. Yeah. Like we have like Chihiro sort of dealing with like this inferiority complex almost, which is never resolved, even though he then makes the decision to like work on it. Which is like the saddest. I hate when character plot lines, like there's character growth and then like their like growth plot is like cut short. It's like, oh, like Hyoko cries forever at that. But anyway, and then in trial two, it's like Mahiru. I mean, I think Mahiru is queer, and I think that there is some like grappling with those feelings, like with Hyoko in that chapter, in my opinion. Again, that's sort of like a little more of a stretch, but I think there is just some unresolved trauma also about her role in this whole Twilight Syndrome situation, right? Which we find out more about in the anime. And then in game three, it's Ryoma dealing with his worthlessness and this idea that like his life is not worth living.
Yeah, I wrote down a lot. The victims asked for advice on how to improve on those things as well from the characters around them. Like Ryoma asked Shuichi for advice on how to improve emotionally. He's like, how do you do it? Like, you know, like I want to be like you. And Chihiro asked Mondo for advice on how to, you know, improve physically. And yeah, I don't know necessarily that Mahiru had reached out to anyone that we're aware of, but I could almost make an argument the other way where Pekko might have been trying to improve like psychologically by making a choice for herself. And she thought it was a choice maybe for Fuyuhiko, but she made a choice by herself for the first time, from what we've seen. And so that could have been her like striving to be something more than what was.
There's also this theme of like honor as well between all of the killers, like Mondo honoring his gang, which is a very like in his hierarchy of like what has power over him, that's number one. And then we have Pekko honoring the family that she works for, and then we have Kurumi honoring her nation and like kind of being in the most honored position in the country. Yeah, that's a huge reason why these people, I think, like, yeah, thought that they could take it into their own hands. Even though Mondo's was kind of in a rage, I think that there is sort of that aspect of like him being like, oh, well, you know, I have to keep my honor and keep my brother's honor, you know, and I'm going to murder. Yeah, I'm sorry. I always forget Mondo's a killer. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
A lot of them are killers.
It's so like unfortunate. I know. You know, like it was just so off the wall. Like you talk about most in the moment decisions.
Oh gosh, I know.
I think he takes the cake. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. Ziggy is sleeping on my Monokuma onesie right now. And he is also black and white. This is my cat for our listeners. He's like the Ultra Hope Girls mascot right now. Danganronpa has Monokuma. Ultra Hope Girls have Ziggy.
Ziggy will not ask us to murder.
No, he will not. He actually only asks for cuddles and head pats.
Which is better than murder.
Yeah, I would say that, well, I'm just kidding. I have nothing more to say. No, go ahead, the man. It's time.
It's very weird and obscure, as it should be. There are a lot of baseball references in each chapter of chapter two, which you'd be like, Aaron, Leon's dead. And I'd be like, you're right. But Himiko says that she doesn't play baseball when they're talking about like, whose team do you play for? She's like, I don't play baseball, like completely missing that reference. Kaito says throwing Ryoma is not like throwing a baseball. There is a bat in game two. That is the murder weapon. Mm-hmm. And then I actually don't have anything written down for game one. So you're right. Leon's dead.
Oh, classic.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Cool, guys. Let's do a boo-boo-boo-hoo.
A boo-boo-boo-hoo.
A boo-boo-hoo. We could do all the...
The murder... The assassins.
Oh.
Toko, Pekko, and... Maki.
That's brilliant. Love it.
Toko, Pekko, Maki.
I guess Toko / Genocide Jack isn't really an assassin.
But they're a package deal.
Serial killer.
Package deal.
I just mean like serial killer rather than assassin.
True, but she assassinates terrible men.
You could also make the argument that Pekko is teetering on assassin line and more of like hitman.
Hitman, that's good.
Thing? Yeah.
Am I just saying synonyms at this point?
And we're forgetting about the real serial killer of game three.
Kellogg.
What?
The real serial killer of game three?
Yeah.
I just named a serial
killer. Correcchio.
Oh my god. Yes, that's right. Oh my god. Oh,
yeah.
So true.
When was he a serial killer? Oh, I remember. We
he's
haven't gotten to that.
Friends for his sister. Oh my god, that chapter.
Friends for his sister.
We need to cover that another time.
Yeah, we don't have time to unpack all. What'd you say?
Don't you have to kill multiple people in the same way to be like a serial killer?
I don't think it has to be the same method.
Well, yeah, I mean, most serial killers have an MO, as they say in Criminal Minds. however, he just kills multiple people. He kills serially, you know?
Yeah, I would say the syntax would be interesting to look into.
Well, there are
like,
serial
maybe he's
killers...
more of like a spree killer.
Right. There are serial killers in Criminal Minds, though, that like the only thing is that they have to kill to fulfill something that they don't have. Like they feel like they've lost, and Correggio feels like what drives him is his need to give his sister friends.
I would say
he's a serial killer.
Call him a serial killer. Absolutely.
Did he kill before this thing, the game? I don't remember.
Yeah,
that.
I think it's implied that he did.
Yes, because he's like, I'm so close to reaching 100 friends for my sister.
I forgot about that.
There's a lot of people. Yeah, yeah.
He is crazy. I love him. Oh my god, why is he so wild though?
He really so makes scary. Choices. Mm.
Yeah. He do be making those choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my.
All right. So I think I'm ready for bed, wed, behead. I think I have my answers. Do you, Marin?
Oh, I don't.
I have not thought about it at all. I'll be completely honest with you. Okay. Yes, I do. Oh no, Caroline.
I do too. I do too. Sorry, I had to like double check my thoughts. I have mine. Maddie's going first.
Okay. I think I have an answer. I think I would. I think I'd behead Maki. I think she's honestly like the least. Out of the three, I think she's the least interesting to me. And I don't know. I think I would bed Pekko because she's beautiful and wed Toko, if you can believe it. Because, especially after Ultra Despair Girls, Toko's grown on me a lot. And she has her little oddities, but I think that we could... It would be a weird relationship, but I think that we could make it work.
Yeah.
Caroline, you're up next.
Okay. I would behead Pekko. Yeah. I just don't, wow. I know, but I just don't feel very like in this group of people, I would prefer, I think, either of the other options. I think I would bed. Oh my God. Okay. I think I would bed Toko and Genocide Jack, I guess. I don't know, at the same time, not sure how that would work, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think again, kind of, I think, again, like Maddie said, after replaying Ultra Despair Girls, I feel like I'm like, yeah, like Toko's matured and it could be fun, you know, if the vibes were there, you know, that kind of thing. And then I would wed Maki. I love her. She reminds me so much of Sarah. Sometimes I just can't help but like, I just can't help but see Sarah in her sometimes, so I would let her.
That's cute. I would behead Toko. Yeah, I love her. It's more the decision for the other two, I feel like, than anything against Toko, if that
makes
sense.
These are great people. We have great pals.
I mean, like, this is such a good prompt with these three. Like, it's a good group. I didn't feel like there was an obvious out for that one, but I would wed Pekko and bed Maki because I think that I like, with relationships, I like to work for it a little bit, but I'm not super into people who are, like, mean. To push away, like Pekko, I feel like is more quiet and reserved, and that would be like a fun long-term relationship. Whereas Maki, I feel like is very like unopen to, I don't know. So I personally headcanon that Maki and Kaito like each other, and she calls him like an idiot all the time. Which is, if that's what they want to do, that's fine. But like, that's just not for me. So. She is I mean, she's hot. Like, yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying, yeah. Becca's my wife.
I like how we all picked different people to wed.
Look at you.
That's pretty cool. And different people to behead.
Didn't we all pick bed.
We picked all different answers, yeah.
Whoa.
Crazy.
Spreading the love.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Ultra Hope Girls. We're so glad that you're here. And let us know your thoughts on these two trials. And let us know if we missed anything. We probably did. Honestly, there's just so much to unpack. Feel free to reach out to us on our website at ultrahopegirls.com or follow us on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. And if you want to be part of the conversation all the time directly with us, join our Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month. And at the $5 a month tier, you get to join our Patreon Discord server, which is pretty fun. The vibes are immaculate, so come hang out. And yeah, we appreciate you all so much. And thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.